36.
I don't know.
Clark County Noxious Weed Control Board, I'm Jerry Colby, Chair. We have Bill Zimmerman, Randy Lauffer, Lee Wells as board members. So we have a quorum, and we'll call that meeting to order. And first order of business be the review of the approval of minutes from the previous meeting. You guys read them, perused them a little bit. Let us know what you think.
I move for approval.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt the minutes as presented. Discussion, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Pose same. Okay, got that taken care of. Ooh, here's a good one. Election of officers. Yeah.
Holy cow.
That time already. Chair, vice chair, and secretary are the three. Chris, are you secretary?
I am.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, chair and vice chair that we elect, right?
Yeah, would be, yep. Well, I move Jerry Colby for chair.
Status quo.
Yeah.
Continuing on.
Won't you volunteer?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Even if you don't volunteer.
Okay, any other nominations?
What was that?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
So if it doesn't happen again.
Any other nominations?
Any nomination for vice chair?
Yeah.
I didn't, because I thought I just heard that Jerry was nominated, correct?
Yeah, but of course, he has to, typically, he's supposed to call for nominations three times, but anyhow, we, you know, among us as friends, I don't think we'll.
Okay, for vice chair, I move that we retain the same one we have.
Who's that? Who's that?
Stranger. Okay, and Bill Zimmerman nominated for chair, or vice chair. Any other nominations for vice chair? I don't remember if I did three or chair.
It doesn't matter.
No. Any nomination for vice chair? I'm gonna do the next one quick. Any nomination for vice chair? We'll close the nominations. All those in favor?
Oh, I was gonna have Randy close nominations and cast a unanimous ballot, so.
Okay. We're gonna do that?
Well, that's up to Randy if he wants to.
I'll make the motion, yeah. I thought you'd call him White Elephant or something.
Yeah. All right, so we have a motion to close the nominations and approve a unanimous ballot. Or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Got that court, yeah. Announcement about Justin. Let's see, that's Justin.
Yeah, actually, we have Justin O'Day attending right now. But he sent us a message on December 19th, just letting us know that he was out sick. And also said that WSU was asking him to refrain from weed board meetings and just be as needed, on an as-needed basis. Maybe, Justin, could you give us an update, if there is one, about if you are still, it says, position is overloaded. Are you still on an as-needed basis, or are you planning on attending some or most of the meetings for the weed board?
Kevin had asked me if I was willing to at least attend the first one of the year, so that would be this one, I think, right? Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Because it was in the statute.
Okay.
Which seemed like a good compromise. Yeah, I was going through my position description with my supervisor, and we were looking at what things we could cut back on as far as what's the most directly applicable. This was just one of the ones that was kind of more on the border, but we wanted to make ourselves available still, nonetheless. It's less the amount of time versus like interruptions from meetings.
Okay.
I'm behind on publications. Just there's a lot of constituents in this county to attend to.
Gotcha. All right. Does anybody have any questions about that for Justin? Okay. Hearing none.
This is Lisa Nelski. I'm just a little concerned. I'm on one other county board, and it seems to be the very first thing that the county wants to get rid of is the board, the volunteer board. So I know there's nothing you can do about that, Justin. That might be something we have to talk to. Like, well, I'll talk to the county council about.
Lisa, this is Kevin Tyler. So this is... this is a request that's coming from, or it's really not a request, it's really Justin, who works for the Extension, Washington State University Extension, is saying that he doesn't have time to commit to these meetings on a quarterly basis. And there's a statute that goes with the creation of county noxious weed control boards that an ex officio member of the county noxious weed control board is the county extension agent. So Justin was filling that role. So I think if there's concern, it would be, we would want to reach out to the extension and determine if there was somebody else, if Justin's got, you know, too much on his plate, is there somebody else that could participate in these meetings on a quarterly basis?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Any other discussion about that? Okay. Hearing none, we can continue to the next item.
Public hearing for state listed noxious weeds for the board to consider. Any written testimony or anybody from the public? Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have any written testimony submitted, so if anybody in attendance wants to make use of it,
okay,
this is the time.
So hearing none, we'll move along.
Okay.
Back to Justin.
All right. I've put in front of you guys the specific wording, and you should also have one of these example lists from 2016 as an example. This is what the weed list publication used to look like as of 2016. I'll see if I can find it for the people who are on the Teams meeting, but I just wanted to highlight the only important thing from this is that there's language that singles out sort of a caveat, and I'll just read it off, I guess, for the people on Teams. Butterfly bush is highlighted, and it says it's designated for control where it is located within 100 feet of a natural watercourse, and shiny geranium. It's in red on the backside if you're not seeing it. Shiny geranium is designated for control at select locations as designated by the Noxious Weed Control Board. So that's a little bit vague. I wanted to put something on our weed list that lets people know if there's a change to the general idea of things being designated for control everywhere, all times, or if there's a specific situation where we want to locally select a weed for our mandating control of it as an option. Otherwise, if we don't locally select it, then we can't really enforce that people do take care of it, stop it from going to seed. So that's where your separate sheet of paper titled Clarifications on Selecting Noxious Weeds for Control in Clark County comes in. I've got a few different species there that we probably should take a look at in our process for adopting the noxious weed list to have some specific language. So starting right off with the easy ones, butterfly bush. Be great if we could have the board consider the language on our published list that's in the quotation marks for these. So we would say for butterfly bush, control is not mandated unless the weeds are within 100 feet of a natural water body, which is very similar to, pretty much mirrors the statement that was made on 2016 on that list, except it's in kind of the reverse, the negative form. And then similarly for Canada thistle and bull thistle, control is not mandated unless the weeds are directly neighboring a property that is producing agriculture. So this would still be pasture for horses, for any livestock really, that's still considered producing agriculture. Moving right along, Eurasian water milfoil, control is not mandated within 100 feet of the Columbia River, since we know the Columbia River has Eurasian water milfoil all the way up into Canada, in just the headwaters. So that's what we historically have given people direction on, as if you own waterfront property along the Columbia, well, that's a bit of a different story. It's always going to be there. And then maybe we can have some discussion for meadow knapweed and shiny geranium. I can provide the perspective from the county side. Field inspection program has not very much time to be able to devote to roadside weeds control, and so we're doing the best we can with the tansy, poison hemlock, and the things that are class A, that sort of thing, on the county roads. And if we are already out of the truck and spraying, well then we'll already hit all these other noxious weeds like shiny geranium and meadow knapweed. But as far as making a special stop to try to address shiny geranium, I can tell you that does not happen, and would be very difficult to see that happening with the time resources we have right now. Face a big shortage of temporary workers. So it definitely is about scope of what we can accomplish. So that's why I'd like to just highlight, especially the meadow knapweed and the shiny geranium, as things that we might consider to take action on. And the language, we could borrow the language for Canada thistle and bull thistle, just to look at, unless they are directly neighboring property that's producing agriculture, then just have them not be designated. And as reference on these weeds, I've got a couple of handouts for shiny geranium and meadow knapweed, if anybody wants to get refreshed on those. And for the Teams meeting, hopefully I'm sharing my screen for meadow knapweed, if it helps. Because this kind of shows you the weed that we're talking about. This is meadow knapweed. I don't know if you guys on Teams can see that.
No.
I can.
Okay.
I'm going to try to get on the computer so I can see. My phone's not showing it.
Okay.
It's showing it now. Super Yakima County.
Okay. So yeah, in our process to adopt the Clark County Noxious Weed List, I would just ask that part of that could be adopting it with the specific language changes, so when we print off the list and we publish it, that people would understand if the board decides to have specific language that limits the designations of things, that we understand are widespread.
So, Justin, if I could ask a couple of questions here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're talking about using the same language as for Canadian thistle. Canadian thistle, it has that weeds are directly neighboring property-producing agriculture. How directly neighboring are we talking?
Mm-hmm. That would be a property line separates producing agriculture property from the one that has the weeds. So okay, if you're talking about a right-of-way, it would be a right-of-way that mm-hmm. is separated by a property line.
So you have a piece of property that's producing ag, you have a property next door of, let's say, a section.
Mm-hmm.
Does that whole section?
It's
Did
teams.
I do something wrong?
No, Teams is doing that.
No, you didn't.
So does the whole section?
Okay.
There's Lisa.
Yeah,
I got it.
So does the whole section, or is it just 100 feet of the section, or what?
Yeah, it would be the whole parcel. So okay, if a parcel is neighboring another parcel.
Okay. So then I also have a question, and I apologize for back and clear up to Butterfly Bush,
mm-hmm.
but you're talking about a natural water body. What terminology are you using for a natural water body? And will this be affected by WOTUS?
Affected by what?
WOTUS. Waters of the United States.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
This language has been used, I believe, by Department of Fish and Wildlife and Department of Ecology to okay. designate things that
so
are not a...
So any mud problem in my yard is going to be...
Yeah. No, it's it's waters that are not a man-dug pond. So if you made a mud puddle by driving over the same spot, and it's a pothole in your road, then that's not a natural water body. That's because you were there and you did it. If you have a watering pond for your cows, again, that's something you dug, that would not be a natural water body. We're talking about Salmon Creek, something
okay,
like that.
Or I have water stand in my field, and that would okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I worry about Butterfly Bush. It's just that a lot is coming under conflict here with this thing of natural water bodies and WOTUS
mm-hmm.
is really throwing things out. Yeah.
Yeah. So the concern that we had with Butterfly Bush historically is, if you do look at the East Fork of the Lewis River, there's a lot of butterfly bush, and that's an easy example to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And I could pull up the pictures of what it does from the state weed board. Butterfly bush really efficiently colonizes all the riparian areas, and what we would be asking people to do, what we have historically asked people to do, is to just clip off the flowers at the end of the season so that we don't have seeds produced washing downstream. So when you're within 100 feet of a natural water course, water body, that you're clipping off the flowers, which is control, right? That's the definition of stopping the spread of seeds.
Okay, can I interrupt real quick? That language in itself would not be very specific. It's what you clip it, what you do with it.
Yeah.
Because I've seen people clip stuff and then throw it into the river because it floats away from them and they don't have to worry about it.
Well, or clip it and drop it, yeah.
Yeah. So then that actually goes to the language of control. Control is a legal term, so you would have to look that up. And when you do, control means that you stop it from propagating. So it actually entails not only seeds. I just kind of made it easy because these guys are, you know, old hands at the whole game. But we all know that control means any part of the plant that spreads the plant. So in the case of knotweed, the knotweed can spread by the roots and by the canes and by any little piece of the stem that has a node that could put roots off. You're not allowed to allow any of those pieces to spread.
I'm just thinking about for those that are not, you know, either in the agricultural business or the spray business, mm-hmm. that own property along land or along waterways, etc., mm-hmm. help them understand. And I think a year or two ago, you put it in a more friendly manner so that they're, you know, I run into a lot of people that just go, well, you know, I get this letter from the county, and it's still, I mean, it's better than the county letter used to be from the county, but it doesn't help them understand.
Mm-hmm.
I realize there's only so much you can do, you know, but.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Justin.
Mm-hmm.
Justin, question about the use of the term water body, or would it make sense to, I mean, if we're concerned about riparian habitat, or mm-hmm. would it make sense to list streams, to say, you know, stream or streams rather than water body? Because water body could be, like you mentioned, Bill, it could be all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stream is defined in county code, so that has mm-hmm. a location to point to.
Yeah, we could do that. And as far as it washing around, that makes sense. If the board is interested in also having control along Vancouver Lake, where we're not talking about a stream, then we might want to say lakes and streams. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That could be an option.
Yeah, I would be open to lakes and streams.
Mm-hmm.
Something that way, yeah.
So is a pond going to fall under lake?
I hope not. I know, Grandy, it's yeah. This whole thing with WOTUS has got everybody scared to death and everything and stuff.
How about Parker Lake?
Huh?
What about Parker Lake?
That's why I like the term natural. Well, you could have not man-made, because Farger Lake, well, which one? You know, you have what's now blueberries,
mm-hmm.
right? So if we could denote the difference between a pond and a lake, that'd be great. Whatever you guys want to do to be specific. I think it's desirable.
I guess, you know, we get so complicated, maybe we're just off, just as well off just to say natural water body. I don't know. What do you think, Lee?
Well, that sounds good. Sounds good to me. It defines it a little more.
Yeah.
You say natural water body, in parentheses, includes streams.
Well, good, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Streams, creeks, or rivers, whatever.
I would, you know, it natural. I would just stay with natural water bodies, yeah. I hate to.
Okay. I'll leave that alone. How about the rest of them?
Do you need a motion on these, Justin, or you got a yes, no here? Do you want us to turn this in?
No, the yes, no is for my benefit. I've got a copy here I'm going to mark up as we go along.
Oh, okay.
What I was thinking is that, yeah, as we go along, maybe we can do a yes, no, you know, and then at the end, we could have, you know, an actual vote on the thing, because we're going to adopt the weed list. do we need to put it in writing, or are we good to just mark it up as we go along?
What do you think, Jerry?
Yeah.
Yes.
Start out with knapweed and see what we got for consensus.
Mm-hmm.
Selected for local control, yes or no?
I would say yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, I guess Lisa's still online.
Yep, sounds like it.
Same for Canadian thistle, then? Same language?
Yeah.
Local control? I'm hearing yes on that?
Yep.
Okay. And shiny geranium, should we select it for local control? And then should the language be the same?
I assume so. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah, I couldn't recognize it.
Really? He's got pictures there, but I'm not familiar with it myself. Yeah.
There you go.
And I'll move the website to show shiny geranium. And second ago. Right there.
Lee, we need to see it.
I've seen it first half.
Oh, you've seen it first. Oh, geez.
It's everywhere. You drive into Camas, it's like the entire border along the side of the road.
Mm-hmm. Really? Okay.
Yeah, the restoration event that I do tries to take care of it, and we mulch over it because it's an annual. If it can't grow to make its seeds, it just doesn't make the seeds. But we couldn't do our events during COVID, and the entire area that we had gotten under control just completely came back. It's just awful.
Hmm. Hmm. Okay.
Must be the only one I don't have. What's your pleasure?
Use the same language, I'd say.
So local control and use the same language as the others?
Yeah.
Is that what I'm hearing?
The only problem is, what do you do with busy farms that has Canadian thistle all over, anyhow?
All around, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
On the whole place. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, we battle it in the berries and everything else. So,
yep. Now the fence row is trying to get into the hay fields and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in the woods. Grow taller trees so they can't see it.
That's all. It's okay.
Okay.
You can't see it, it isn't there.
Yep, that's right. Block the road. Okay. Oops.
All right, so it sounded like yeses on all of meadow knapweed and shiny geranium.
Mm-hmm.
Butterfly bush as worded.
Oh, yes.
And what about Canada thistle and bull thistle? Does the language in the quotation marks look right? I'll read it off for the people who are on Teams. It says, control is not mandated unless the weeds are directly neighboring a property that is producing agriculture.
And you said horse pastures are producing agriculture.
Yes. So we would be leaning on the same definitions as the other county departments have spelled out. So if you're in the program, you know, that has different taxes and land use and that sort of thing, then yeah.
So it would not be determined by zoning, whether it's rural zoned or agriculture zoned.
Right. Yeah. It would just be defined the same way. Well, the same way as when we have the RCW 1710 saying that to be on the weed board, you have to have so many members that are producing agriculture. So it's the same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The only thing with the deal with Canadian thistle is, my God. That stuff will travel for miles. We had a number of years ago, we had a property west of us that was about a mile west of us, and that property, the whole thing, you might have been involved with trying to get that straightened up and everything. Now the county has a lot of it, and my God, in the evening, the wind would blow just right, and that just, it looked like a cloud of thistle just flying over, so, yeah.
Snowstorm.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah, yeah.
Like cottonwood.
So.
Yeah, I would have.
But I don't know how you do too much. I mean, you know, directly neighboring is about the best you can do, I guess.
Yeah, I would echo that. My own little anecdote, I had Canada thistle spring up on my property in a place it's never been before either, right in the middle. So I have heard it said that most of the seeds are actually sterile, so they won't start new plants. When you see it all blowing over, most of them are not.
1% is. But,
yeah, 1% of a million is still a lot.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know that the ones on my property started from seeds. Mm-hmm. Had to have been. And so, I share your concern with that, and short of finding some other metric.
Our biggest challenge with what I am growing, strawberries, raspberries, blackberries, blueberries, we have a very limited repertoire that we can draw from that we can control Canadian thistle with, mm-hmm. and boy, it's tough. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So, okay, don't want to take them.
But I'm sure that Randy can attest, if you go to do any logging and tear the ground up a little bit, mm-hmm. no thistles around, the next year you've got an infestation of thistles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Kind of the same with tansy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As soon as you break that ground or tear it up a little bit.
All those seeds that have landed over the years.
Been laying there just waiting for you to drag a tree through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And we had some discussion earlier about what it might mean to be directly neighboring a property as far as how do we define that, and can we be clearer on that? And my explanation was that you would be across a property boundary. So how are you directly a neighbor? Well, you're directly on the other side of a property boundary. So the roads are across a property boundary. That means that along county roads, we'll be controlling Canada thistle and bull thistle, where it's right next to agriculture. Assuming, of course, that, you know, that person doesn't say to us, ah, we're doing our own and we want, you know, to have you not spray here. So
saying that then, Justin, this is, okay, you have a road right-of-way adjoining my agricultural land, mm-hmm. and the neighbor has 100 acres of Canadian thistle. He doesn't have to control it.
Come again?
If the road's in between.
If the road's in between, you know, my property and him.
So technically, your property boundary is the center line of the road.
Oh, not mine.
Then the, well, so city you're saying the county
city
actually
Ridgefield, belongs to the city.
Okay,
and
so you're saying they
the county.
They annexed it, and it's
mine too. Is the same thing.
Fee title.
You have
you
have to dedicate them to.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because usually just trying to help.
You. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, and to be clear, maybe we should have maybe we should make it clear. I'm fine to, you know, go to people and say it's 100 feet of a water body, a natural water body. It can be 100 feet of the property line. If that's what the board wants, then that's very cut and dry.
Then it would go over that road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And it's going to blow that far.
Yes. Yeah. Doesn't respect the road. I concur.
I thought years ago there was a footage from your property line back, mm-hmm. that you had the control. I think it was tansy at that time. You know, you had to keep it controlled within 15 feet of your property line or 25 mm-hmm. feet, whatever it was. And that was considered control. The rest of it you could let go, even though it blows.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things you might be referring to. Kind of by word of mouth, That sort of idea got along, and I think it has merit to be respectful of your neighbors. You're going to start at the boundaries and work your way toward the center of your property, especially where your neighbor's boundary is, where they're producing agriculture or, you know, they're especially concerned with it. And specifically in the law, where RCW 1710 talks about land management plans, where a landowner can come to the board, you guys, and say, I'm trying to work on this, and in practice it's me that they come to. I'm trying to work on this, but I have 1,000 acres, and I only have, you know, 2 employees, and so on and so on. So for this year, I can do something, but I can't do it all, and I want to agree to do a good faith effort, and I can have a land management plan with them under the law. The law allows for them to have a different arrangement other than complying with the law. But there are specific limitations on that land management plan, to include a 1,000-foot buffer along the edges. So, and it specifically, again, calls out agricultural land. So, 1,000-foot buffer away from agricultural land is where you have to still control the weeds. That might be what you're thinking of.
Yeah. So Randy's property with timber on it, does that classify as agricultural land under your peruse? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They don't consider agriculture.
It's silviculture.
Yeah. Okay. Sure, definitions vary from something to something else, but if you went to the state weed board, I'm sure they would consider that agricultural. Yeah.
Income tax wise, you try to call it an agriculture, and it's not agriculture.
Mm. Yeah.
It's forestry.
Mm-hmm. Forestry. Yeah. And if you want to change the wording for it, and we can put in directly neighboring a property that is involved in agriculture and forestry, then we could do that.
Because you got a lot of people that order warehouser.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't do a whole lot of weed control.
Right.
And Justin, aren't there specific requirements in RCW 1710 for forest land?
Yes.
So that you're allowed to manage weeds differently on forest land,
yes,
than
that's
everything
true.
Else.
And that was the same section I was talking about. So the land management plan specifically singles out.
There were so many feet in that, wasn't it? And they tried to extend it back, but that didn't pass.
Right. Yep. Correct.
Somebody's in a hurry.
Yeah. Stink. Sounds like a stink bug. It's really spring in the bumblebee.
Wonder if it's the switch engine. Wonder if it's the switch engine out there crossing the road or something.
Mm-hmm.
There was a high rail crossing. Yeah, crossing the road.
Okay, so are we square with you on?
Or do you need a?
I need a motion now on this.
So on that Canadian thistle, if you got somebody bordering you,
mm-hmm.
Can you call up the weed board and say, hey,
no,
I'd like
here
is not controlling it. I want somebody to come out and look.
Yeah.
Then it's up to you to go out and say, hey, you got to control this.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's going to say, well, who turned me in?
Yeah. Friendly neighbors then. Yeah.
I got a horse farmer right beside me. They don't do any Canadian. And it just, it blows over.
Yeah.
I'm continually spraying that field there.
Hmm. Yeah.
Did we want to change the wording on Canada thistle, bull thistle?
Well, we could.
To specify that, yeah, it crosses over a road, it crosses over, you know, kitty corner, if you don't actually share a border, but, you know, you're diagonal. We could just change it to say within 100 feet, and then that neatly solves all those problems.
Okay.
So you're changing it to read?
Control is not mandated unless the weeds are within 100 feet of a property that is producing agriculture. How does that sit with people?
Okay.
And did we touch on Eurasian watermill foil? Is that fine to put that in writing, the way it is? And for the people on Teams, Eurasian watermill foil, the language is, control is not mandated within 100 feet of the Columbia River.
I guess, is there specific language that it is mandated elsewhere? Okay. Because I was going to say is the control is mandated except within 100 feet of the Columbia River, but okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can put it that way. That'd be just as easy. Do these other ones have unless? So it does beg the question.
I just figured, you know, somebody's going to look at that and go, well, it's not mandated. It says it's not mandated.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yep, we can make it match the other ones and say, is not mandated if you're within 100 feet. Or we can say, control is mandated unless you are within 100 feet.
That's what I would lean toward, Justin.
Okay. Control is mandated.
Anybody else have any?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Unless.
Sounds better with the last definition.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other discussion?
Okay. Very good with that. So we leave butterfly bush the same as written. Canadian thistle and bull thistle changes unless the weeds are within 100 feet of the neighboring property that is producing agriculture.
Correct.
And Eurasian milfoil control is mandated unless you are within 100 feet of the Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got yes on knapweed, yes on the same language for thistle, Canadian thistle. Yes on shiny geranium, and yes on the same language again for Canadian fir. The language should be the same as Canadian thistle. So those are all yes. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So then we need a motion to accept the clarifications.
Okay. Also move.
Hold a second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt those clarifications on noxious weeds for control. Any other discussion? You're all happy, vote yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Opposed? Yeah. The same?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. We've adopted the clarifications as changed and presented.
All right, great.
Let's see, we took care of that. Up to you on updates.
Yeah, I can provide some brief updates here. So,
Justin, do you need them to officially adopt the weed list? So they adopted.
I think
just
we have to. Yeah.
Yes.
The changes, but they have to adopt the list, right?
Yes. Right. Yes. Yeah. So yes, the official list. So.
Thank you.
We have, yeah, last year's list, and these are the changes. There were no changes at the state level, okay. So this last year's list is the same one. And I can pull up last year's list quick enough.
Thank you.
There's the list.
If you can read it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Maybe I can help that out a little bit. Like so. Yeah. It's long. Can you see that, Lisa?
Kind of.
Yeah. Probably sees about as good as we do.
Yeah, it's long. I mean, we could pass around this one, but it's the same as last year. So
yeah, we can send it that way if you want.
Oh, okay.
It's the same.
Yep. Yeah, that's the update I was gonna give you. The language about feral holly was struck down at the state level. Mm. And so they are kind of gonna go back and see what they can do for it, but that's not gonna change right now.
Are we ready for a motion on this one? I move that we accept the 2022 Clark County Noxious Weed List for 2023.
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to adopt the 2022 Noxious Weed List for our list of 2023. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Vote the same. Thank you, Lisa. Okay, we've adopted that. Now we'll go to the FIP.
All right, now we're official. Thanks, Kevin. All right, so like I was saying, feral holly, that language didn't sit right with somebody. And so the pushback resulted in they just don't have that anymore. So even though they were trying to make a distinction between the actual industry of growing holly for commercial purposes, that didn't work still for some people. So there will be more to come on that. I think they will keep trying to find a way to make everybody happy if they can. We'll see. And the changes at the state level to designations and all that had no effect on Clark County at all. So that's why I say everything is exactly the same. There were a couple changes, but there wasn't anything for our specific county. So I wanted to give an update on the very belief milfoil that we've been finding. The DNA tests have come back and confirmed that the milfoil that we've been finding is not Eurasian water milfoil, except a few places, and they're calling it the variable leaf milfoil, and also a hybrid cross between variable leaf milfoil and the native milfoil. That's Western water milfoil, which has a big long Latin name, and I can bring it up if you like, but that's a native plant that's native to pretty much all of the lower 48, Canada, and it's pretty accepted as, yes, mm-hmm. It's something that should be here. So at the state level, there's efforts right now to probably have the hybrid or all hybrids also listed as class A, so that anytime we find variable leaf milfoil crossing and making a hybrid, that
that would also be listed as Class A. When I spoke to Ryan out of Montana State University, who performs the DNA tests for us, he let me know that the DNA test is valid as far as a scientific test goes, but the results that it gives should be taken with a grain of salt, because he let me know there's only one.
That is annoying.
Maybe it's because somebody got kicked out.
I think so. Somebody left or was kicked out. Okay. There's nobody for me to admit, so that's fine.
But there's only one segregating site, is what he told me, which means, in layman's terms, there's only one gene difference. So if you have blue eyes or you have brown eyes, well, that's, you know, that's determined by just one gene. So essentially, you could think of it kind of like all of the native plants are blue-eyed and all of this invasive plants are brown-eyed, and then they, you know, cross and you have some mixture of both of them. But there's really only one thing that separates the invasive from the native. Mm-hmm. And so he was maybe uncomfortable, I guess, would be the best word to describe our conversation, that his test would be determining, you know, whether or not we went after something with policy as far as state level. He was saying that it could be just variation within the same species. You know, people can be blue-eyed or brown-eyed, and we're still all people, right? So if it is the same species, then that kind of has implications as far as we could be seeing a native plant that's kind of going nuts out there in some people's ponds, as plants do. You know, I get calls all the time from people who say, I think I have knotweed out there because this plant is just going nuts and growing up in my forest understory, and come out and look at it, and it's elderberry. And I say, well, you know, what you have here isn't knotweed. And then they complain, well, it's doing this, you know, behavior. It looks weedy because it's just showing up everywhere. And I say, well, yes, okay, so what are your expectations for this land? Because plants try to grow. And we see, you know, all the time there's stuff that pops up that's a native plant, and, you know, sometimes it's easier to get rid of than other times if that's what you're trying to do. But the point is that if this is a native plant, how much, you know, do we feel comfortable with devoting all the time and resources and energy to drawing this distinction and saying, you know, this native plant is now going nuts? Well, what's it doing? What's it hurting? You know, what's the impact? And at the state level, yes, it's a Class A noxious weed, but as you guys are aware, things change. And based on distribution data and saying, you know, here's how many places it's been found. So, all that to say, we will be very closely coordinating with people from the state weed board, Department of Ecology, and everybody else. There's been a lot of interest since this is the first hybridization that's been documented, and we'll keep you guys up to date as far as where this goes. Our plan is to continue doing what we've already committed to, but maybe change plans for what we want to commit to in the future if we can determine that that's the best course of action. So the people from the State Department of Ecology are taking very active interest in trying to get as much help as they can to come to Clark County and, you know, continue our work as far as the surveys go. So we'll see where it all goes. I'm interested to have those discussions to kind of pin down what exactly the end goal could be. We found it in multiple watersheds now, all across Clark County. It's been found in Lake Merwin. So you have lots of boat activity out of Lake Merwin. And anytime you have something that's widespread, you start asking the questions of, well, what can we realistically expect to come of this? Can we realistically eradicate something that's been here for at least 9 years and has a big head start on us? What should our expectations be? And working with the people who, you know, have the money and their expectations. So we'll keep you guys up to date. And any questions you have about that, feel free. Be happy to answer questions, and I can forward any questions, I don't know, to the guy at the university or whoever has the answers.
Can I ask one question?
Mm-hmm.
Between the native species of the milfoil and the invasive species of the milfoil,
mm-hmm.
Do you find that the native species are not growing as vivaciously as the invasive, or just the invasive is noticeable because you're used to looking at the native? And how much harm does it cause?
At this point, I've never seen the native plants. All I've seen is a hybridization between the native and the invasive. So, just like I can't tell you from looking at the plant, is this a native plant or an invasive plant? And we need a DNA test to confirm what we're talking about. I couldn't tell you. I'm very new at this. This has been the first that we've had such an early detection, rapid response sort of aquatic plant. You know, knotweed is here, it's been here for a long time. We're kind of behind the eight ball on that one. But with variable leaf milfoil, there's still a lot up in the air, yeah. So if I saw a patch of it, I would have to say, I don't know what it is, to be able to say, you know, is this one acting aggressively? Well, we have pictures of the plants that seem to be acting aggressively. But I also have other pictures where it's in half a pond and doesn't seem to be expanding in that pond. And when I talk to the landowner, he says, yep, where it is right now, that's where it was when I first moved in 8 years ago. And so, you know, it hasn't gone to the other side. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then Tree of Heaven. So I recently met with people from City of Vancouver and other interested parties. Citizen scientists and people who are helping to map the locations of Tree of Heaven, because there are a lot of locations of Tree of Heaven. And they filled me in on some stuff and kind of corrected my thinking on some other points, which was great. And I name-dropped Lisa Nelski as citizen scientists who are very interested in making sure that the invasive species are responded to. And that was productive, and they're very interested in the next steps and how they can partner with any efforts to actually do control work and next steps on, again, expectations of what can we really do to reduce the threat, a spotted lanternfly, and also just for Tree of Heaven itself. You know, there was kind of a note of, well, we're only talking about this now because of the spotted lanternfly, but all by itself, Tree of Heaven is its own issue enough, and so they're passionate about it. And I just have to repeat the same thing. There's more to come, and that's what I told them. More to come on that. We'll see what the state wants to do. And since they have the money, specifically WSDA, what they want to do for next steps, control work, and taking all that mapping data and turning it into something that we can use to mitigate the risk.
After our last meeting, you showed us, tree of heaven and how to identify it. I went out in the field, and sure enough, I have in one spot there, tree of heaven. Mm-hmm. It's slated for disposal, but anyhow, it was too late in the year to get any Roundup on it or anything mm-hmm. on it. But anyhow, ironically, that's the only one out of all the other trees we have showing up in the blueberries. Mm. Yeah. So, anyhow,
was it your southwest corner of your parcel?
Northeast.
Oh, it was northeast. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 You wouldn't be able to see it. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Well, there's quite a lot of black walnut out in Clark County as well.
Mm-hmm.
And black walnut looks so much like it, and also it was a very weedy tree, I have to be honest. You know, you mm-hmm. find it in bark dust plantings and alongside the roads and mm-hmm. just moving in any disturbed area. Black walnut's out there too. So anytime in Clark County that we're trying to find it, we always just try to emphasize to the volunteers or, you know, citizen scientists everywhere. The easiest way to tell the difference, I would say, is the leaf serrations, mm-hmm. because black walnut is quite different with its mm-hmm. leaf serrations. And Tree of Heaven has the smooth edges of all the little leaflets, except for the little lobes that are near the stem. So, yeah. You know, you're not going to be able to smell it if you're, 100 feet away or whatever, but you might still be able to tell the difference that way. Tree of Heaven, we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. And then we're still conducting all of our other programs and doing all the other things. Because we have the possibility that we might have a different contract for temporary services in the middle of next field season, we might potentially see more temporary staff when the contract comes up and gets renewed. But that's again a question mark, because I think the job market is going to dictate that a lot more than the potential of getting different contracts. So, contracts are kind of their own deal, and we have to see how that shakes out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful anyway.
Yeah.
If you guys have anything else too that I can update you on, I'm happy to answer any questions too.
Anything else? Anything from the board?
I had one thing I wanted to, just a point of interest. We went to the Ag Show down at Salem a couple of weeks back, and one of the booths we went past where they were advertising drones for spraying. And we went to this one, and they had a video running of this drone spraying, and I thought, oh, well, I've seen other operations that guys have put together in one thing or another. Well, this didn't do justice to this drone. This drone was about 8 foot in diameter or 8 foot square.
Mm-hmm.
And this drone has a 12-minute flight time, 9 minutes to recharge, and it all runs by GPS and everything. It is amazing what they are doing. 110-pound lift capacity of this drone, either to spray or to fertilize with. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, wow, they are the Smuckers that is the distributor for it has offered, and we're probably going to take them up on it, is to come up and do some spraying at our place this summer when we're in the middle of things. And we're going, wow, to be able to spray for like Drosophila, or we also were talking about doing it spraying for downy mildew, spray Bravo on pumpkins, and not have to travel in the field and crush any pumpkins or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so but this is amazing what they're going to, and it makes you sit, or at least it does me anyhow. I sit there and I go, what are we going to see in 5 years? Are we going to see where we pretty well eliminate the, you know, a lot of these high voice sprayers and one thing another else? And this thing was fantastic. What it could do, telephone pole, it knew right where it was, and a tree or anything else, it had its own radar. Terrain following, they showed it on one place in the Andes anyhow. And I mean, it's flying up this slope that must be, you know, a 50% slope. And it's, you know, and it's like, wow, and maintains its altitude the whole time. It's just amazing.
Give any idea what the cost of those are?
Yeah, $26,000. So it's a little bit out of our price range at the moment.
Yeah.
But however, you know, we were sitting there looking at it going, wow, we have to get in and spray for earworm in the corn, which would be great. We have to spray for Drosophila, which means we got to drive down through the berry rows and one thing another, and we knock a lot of berries off doing it. And you go, wow, we wouldn't have to do that. And pumpkins, like I said, and everything else, you know, that you can do it all by GPS, and it memorizes where it stopped and will run back. Or you can run two at the same time, mm-hmm. and one is recharging or getting a new fresh battery while the other is flying, and then whenever that one finishes, the one taking off follows and finishes. It's just the technology they have today is just amazing. Yeah.
As a commercial applicator, you know, it's kind of like, I wonder what the one insurance requirements would be on something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've got a friend that used to do insurance for the crop dusters down in California, and they said the liability is tremendously high.
Oh yeah.
But the other, I wonder how much you could actually do with that in a day.
Oh, a lot. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not as much as, you know, like the big high boy sprayers that are running 120 or 160 foot booms, yeah, it's amazing what it could do, running two especially, and stuff. Interesting too was, on the go, you can control the droplet size. Like if you're flying the border of a field, you can go to big droplets that won't drift.
Yeah.
And then once you get your border sprayed, switch to fine droplets, and do that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow.
So anyhow,
I like cool. them for slopes. That's what we were doing with the knotweed program. So we had pretty insane gullies uh-huh. where the land just dropped
Labor's
off.
Expensive.
And then you're looking at the tops of trees.
Uh-huh.
They're 400 feet tall, but you're just seeing the tops of them.
Uh-huh.
And the drone doesn't twist its ankle in a mountain of blackberries.
Right.
And that's a lot easier than having your temps scramble down the hill.
Right. Right.
And mm-hmm. we covered a lot of ground with the drone in this one little gully, and I was very impressed with the flight time mm-hmm. as far as the battery capacity to be mm-hmm. able to cover the ground and get right in close for the pictures of the stream and send it on. Yeah.
Like you say, next 5 years.
Yeah.
Anything else from the board? Yeah. A little over on time, but that's all right. Okay, so the next meeting is May 1st, 9 a.m., probably here. So I'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting.
Okay.
And we'll see you in a few minutes.
Thank you, Jerry.
You